I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we educate as well as horrify. I am your host, Bob, Grandpa's little helper, Mackie, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and can we stop at Flicky's?
And who else?
I'm Dave Rudden, and I need the biggest seed bell you have.
And we should mention Chris Antista is out on assignments.
Yes, no, he's enjoying a much-earned vacation. I do feel a little bad he's missing out on this one, because I bet it is one of his favorites.
I'm sorry, Chris. But today's episode is Itchy and Scratchy Land.
Now remember, we're in the Itchy Lodge.
And this episode aired on October 2nd, 1994, and not as always, Henry will tell us what happened on this day in history.
Oh boy, Bobby! An NHL lockout begins that'll stretch until January 11th. Harry and Nelson of Ozzy and Harriet dies, and the Rolling Stones Voodoo Lounge Tour becomes the highest-grossing tour ever!
Have the Voodoo Lounge tour killed.
Yeah, I mean, this was the era in which the first wave of the Rolling Stones are too old jokes were happening, and they're still performing, and Keith Richards still alive. Fingers crossed, Talking Simpsons curse, knock on wood.
Yes, but 23 years ago, I am certain that has been, that record of highest grossing thing has been shattered like 18 times over. It was when they realized how much they could fleece the baby boomers, or they're just like, oh, baby boomers have a lot of money now. If we charge $600 for tickets, it's like, they'll pay it.
But just think how hollow their bones must be now. They're probably bird-like in appearance. They're like Skeksis.
Though, talking about like price of tickets, that upcoming or has happened, Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather fight, they're like, they say like, oh, there's 3,000 tickets left. Yeah, the cheap tickets left, they're $3,500.
Wow.
Like they're going to make $80 million just on the seats.
Yeah. Even Hamilton can't charge for that.
Well, speaking of violence, the NHL lockout, I remember that being substantial because I came a couple of months after the entire MLB World Series was canceled. Mm-hmm. But they didn't cancel the Stanley Cup. They still were able to finish the season, obviously.
Was this
like
a strike?
Was it a lockout or a strike?
It is officially called a lockout. Yeah. It was the players taking action that they had renegotiated a thing and with the companies, and the companies were trying to get another like pay cap, which they did not want. So they just said, then we're not coming. And they didn't make a deal. And by January 11th, they made a deal. And even though they missed 485 games, they still finished out the season. They resumed it. Though, to me, it feels like NHL postseason is like half the year.
Yeah,
it's NBA forever.
It's NBA-like, where it's like the top eight teams in each conference get... So 16 out of 32 teams are in the playoffs. It's like, it's not really high stakes if half of the league makes it to the playoffs.
Yeah, though, I mean, it takes more time, but if you actually want to know who the best team is, then you need that much stuff. You don't need, like the NCAA March Madness. It's just you get one game, and if you lose that, boom, you are out of there.
I have nothing to add to this conversation. today's episode is Itchy and Scratchy Land. I got to say, this is the first episode of production season 6, and boy, does it get off to a huge, amazing start this season.
They were right out the gate with just a fantastic episode, directed by Wes Archer, who this is him kind of flexing the muscles he would use as the supervising director of Rick and Morty.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he is doing that now. Mm-hmm. And there's an interesting story to how this episode came into being. If you listen to the commentary, David Merkin said that the government was beginning to start cracking down more on TV violence. This is the era in which there was also a freak out about video game violence. And Fox was like, okay, David Merkin, you can't use Itchy and Scratchy anymore. And he's like, I will not only use Itchy and Scratchy, I will make an entire episode about Itchy and Scratchy, so fuck you. Yeah. And I think later he questioned Fox. Like, Fox told him, oh, we've been getting letters about Itchy and Scratchy. He's like, show me one letter, and they couldn't. And I'm so impressed that he was able to tell this story on a Fox-produced DVD about how bad and stupid the network was. But this is his revenge against network suits, trying to get him to tone down on the violence.
I do like that. I do think, you know, even with Itchy and Scratchy, they still were... This isn't as bloody as, say, Bart of Darkness had some bloodier stuff of Itchy and Scratchy, but I love that he went overboard with that, and that he is... It wasn't that parents were coming up to him. It was that an executive was telling him parents exist.
Yeah.
And I'm glad this episode episode exists as a kind of fuck you to those people. And also, a thing I missed in our season 5 wrap-up that I want to mention now is, in The Simpsons history, on August 7th is when The Simpsons returned to the Sunday night time slot and has been there ever since, the last 23 years.
It was a Thursday for 4 years?
It was a Thursday for seasons 2, 3, 4, and 5. Yeah. And so then, with a rerun on August 7th, it made its move to Sunday nights, where it has remained ever since. Partially, they did it to buoy their Sunday night lineup that was going to start having NFL games. So that it was done in conjunction with that. But
by boost, they mean get interrupted all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Sunday is the Simpsons night. It just feels weird that it was ever on Thursday at this point.
I know. All just to defeat Bill Cosby, which, you know. I can't even. It's annoying. You can't even talk about
it. No, he did himself in the end. So, this episode begins with basically a glorified ad for Itchy and Scratchy Land baked within an Itchy and Scratchy cartoon.
Yeah, I like the Itchy and Scratchy cartoon Last Traction Hero.
Oh, right. Another Last Action Hero reference.
Which, if you want to learn all about that, listen to the Boy Who Knew Too Much podcast we did. But I did like the simple pain of Scratchy, he's bleeding from all the little pinpricks, and he's getting kind of tired of losing a lot of blood here.
And I do like the mislead, we're cutting ticket prices in half, and he just stabs him in the brain instead of cutting the ticket in half.
Yeah, here is the commercial.
Now I'd like to speak to you seriously for a moment.
Yep, this week is the grand opening of Itchy and Scratchy Land, the violentest place on Earth.
And to celebrate, for this week only, we're cutting ticket prices in half.
Yo!
Kids, you heard the cartoon rat. If you haven't already run to your parents begging to go, do it now. You won't be missing anything funny. I'll just be sitting here reading this grown-up's newspaper. Go now!
It's funny, they never had to talk more before or since than in that cartoon. I mean, they talked in the bad Marge-produced cartoon.
Lemonade.
More lemonade? Yeah.
And waited for voices.
And in the Poochie episode, you look like you have something to say. Do you?
It's not a great voice to keep up with a conversation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's also... I thought this was directly a joke on all the TGIF shows that went to Disney theme parks same time, where having Roseanne or the Step-by-Step kids say, isn't this cool? Man, Disney World has so many cool things.
So I have to point out, we have to discuss this off the bat, where, this came up in the Itchy and Scratchy movie episode. It is, what is Itchy and Scratchy in relation to Krusty the Clown? Mm-hmm. In Itchy and Scratchy the movie, they were established to be a Disney-like creation, and they were part of a Disney-like empire, and that's continued in this episode itself. But what is Krusty's relationship? Does he work for the Itchy and Scratchy company? Is he an employee? Well, I mean, does he just buy the rights to show the cartoons? It's so weird.
Well, at some point, they went to the Gabbo show. So
they are gettable. Yeah. Yes. They aren't owned by Krusty Lou Studios. I think it is a licensing deal that Krusty engages in, and partially he got paid more money by Russ Meyer Jr. to advertise Itchy and Scratchy Land in that episode.
Is there any Itchy and Scratchy logos or characters in Krusty Burger?
No, I don't think so. Krusty Burger is kind of his own thing, though, which actually I think we'll probably get into a little more in this episode, but at the Universal Studios theme park, Itchy and Scratchy Land and Krusty Land are kind of the same thing in that area, in the area that replaced Back to the Future, as we talked about on a Laser Time episode. Yeah. But in front of there, it's kind of a combo, Itchy and Scratchy Land, Krusty Land. I think they mix them up together, I do see it as just, it's like Bozo the Clown shows Popeye cartoons.
Right.
And if Popeye were successful enough, maybe King Features would pay him to be like, hey, advertise the new Popeye attraction. But he does not own Popeye.
I was kind of surprised that, it was just, my memory that I haven't seen this episode in a number of years that, Krusty reads something from the paper on the show. That's Corey. Corey's the one who reads the paper.
Yeah, Krusty's grown-up newspaper is a racing form, so he's clearly, interested in betting and anything that's happening on his show.
That just so clearly says racing form on it.
So it could be part of the sports section. Where I grew up, they would have racing forms in the sports section. Why do I need to know what horses are racing at Yonkers?
Krusty's not trying as hard with this as he did at Mount Splashmore.
That's true.
Maybe Itchy and Scratchy didn't pony up the dough to send him to
That's
this
true.
Place.
He was recording all week at Mount Splashmore. He's probably really getting into it, you know?
So many memories. Despite the fact that Homer goes to church every Sunday and started his own religion, he did not know what the Bible was or who Jesus was until buying that Bible.
Yeah. It's like a $15 Bible?
Yeah. I figured
they're either super expensive or free.
There's no easier book to get for free than the Bible. Yeah. Maybe Atlas Shrugged, but the Bible's a close second, I think.
They got to give it away. Yeah. And then, so we get a repeat of, can we get a pool dad? Can we get a pool dad? Or all the repetition of Simpson-y children stuff. But Homer has learned a new strategy. Pass the buck to mom. Which is what dad's, my dad had done that. I had learned that, no, I actually need to ask my mom for these things. Like, dad is technically the figurehead in this, but mom will actually buy the thing and spend the money.
So. And they immediately start cheering when they realize they can ask Marge because they know they've won.
Yeah, they've got a better chance. Yeah. But I just, I love the specificness of Marge talking about the Highway 9 Bird Sanctuary. It sounds like a very Oakley and Weinstein thing, too.
And that front-on look at them from above, like, that is just an iconic.
That's a great pose and great expression we've never seen before or since. It's such shock and sadness.
One, and I have been in that position. This is going to be a lot of suburban middle-class kids complaining about their free vacations as a kid, but I did have that feeling a couple times as a kid of, like, I have no control over this vacation. I don't want to do this thing, but it's where my parents want to go. The worst one was Hi-Li. Like, my dad really wanted us to see live Hi-Li. He's like, well, I bet on this through closed circuit TV at the racetrack, but I want to see live Hi-Li.
My favorite Hi-Li stars are going to be there.
Barriaga. But it gets Hi-Li is fun for 7 seconds, and then you're just like, boy. Well, especially if you can't bet on it, it's no fun. Yeah. It's not fun if you can't. The only reason Hi-Li is fun is if you gamble.
I'm not going to have any stories like that because my family didn't go on vacations. I would just go with my friends if they went to an amusement park or something nearby. But it was basically like my parents weren't mean, but they're like, we build a pool, swim in the pool. It's like that's your vacation. It's like it's a little resort in your backyard.
Yeah, I think my family went on vacations, but my dad really hated the travel and other people and also the driving. Like, I won't.
Basically everything involved.
My dad's an angry guy, but I won't forgive him for, like, not wanting to be around other people and disliking that, but I do understand. He is like, I want to go on cruises because driving sucks, and I don't want to do a giant road trip because I'm the one doing the driving, and it's... So I get, that's why he prefers cruises of, I go here, I don't have to buy, it's all expenses paid, and I can gamble. So then the children find a better way to convince Marge.
Mom, Dad, Marge's dead!
That's right, dead serious about going to Itchy and Scratchy Land.
You know, Itchy and Scratchy Land isn't just for kids. They have a place called Parents Island. Dancing, bowling, fashionable shops, over 100 bars and saloons, and a world-class chemical dependency center.
TV Town! Hammockland!
Ooh, recipe-related bumper cars.
Yay!
I included that little pause there because I don't understand it. Like, it feels like an editing mistake or something. It just holds on them.
It's the kids being presumptuous. Like, they kind of like it.
I think they're processing what's happening in front of them, and then they just both decide, yes, we are going. But, I mean, this does remind me as when I was a kid, if you wanted to talk your parents into something that you also wanted to do, it's like, what would the adults want out of this equation?
Trying to
have a sales pitch ready.
It taught you negotiation as a kid, because you realize, like, you won't just convince them of saying, I want to do this. Like, there is nothing in it for them. And I now read Parents Island as Epcot, or at least that's what was in my mind when I went to Epcot as someone of drinking age. She was just like, this is educational, so there's fewer children here. It has all the best food and drinks, which is a child I did not give a shit about. And I want to go to every country and buy the crap. Like, I loved Epcot, and I the whole time I was there, I was like, this is Parents Island. And
I have a real soft spot for the recipe-related bumper cars joke. Just, what is that? Do you read a recipe while you're on the bumper car? Do you get to take a recipe home with you? It's great that Marge wants to learn something while on a bumper car.
It's true, yeah. And meanwhile, Homer just wants to be in many different hammocks.
Watching TV.
Which she'll really enjoy when he gets to go to the Hammock District. Mm-hmm.
The Hammock District. And the Bart's Dead bit, I thought that was... I remember that being in the promos, like the commercials for it. Bart's Dead, what? Like, it's going to get you to watch it. It's a nice little fake out. But then we get like a very lazy Amish joke, which, like, I get it. Amish people don't do stuff.
A few episodes after an Amish guy told them they weren't building a pool.
That's true. Yeah. But
I did go to Amish country plenty of times because it was right across the border in Pennsylvania. And, I mean, you go there, you feel bad for the kids who can't play Nintendo, you buy some candy and some weird toys, and you go home. My grandma liked it a lot.
No, they seem fine. I never went to it either. I'm just tired of Amish jokes. Every comedy has done an Amish joke because it's an easy way to make fun of a strict Christian fundamentalism and a demographic of people who, Dave Attell has this great joke about it. They says, like, oh, the Amish jokes, why are you doing that? It's like, yeah, because they'll never see this and they won't be offended. Same with Eskimos, or as I call them, snow Mexicans. David Tell's very funny. But I at least liked in the Amish joke that it implied Homer bought like 12 ice cream cones only to shove them on people's faces.
And donkeys, too.
And where did he get the ice cream? I don't think the Amish would sell ice cream. Isn't it too sweet?
Wait a minute.
It's the devil's cream.
They're willing to play ball with electricity if it means they can sell you something. Yeah.
Then we have the Shark Boy Sandy Beach scene, which is cute, but obviously it's Jaws. It's the Jaws scene. The Lisa and Marge sitting up is directly from
You're right, yeah.
And those were they're kind of framed as like, oh, remember this old episode kind of thing?
Yeah.
Where I thought like, oh, these are going to just be flashbacks to old episodes, but they're new footage, which is not like, it's pretty substantial that they went to like, they made new locations just for these things.
Yeah, I just wish... They said, when we went to Sandy Beach, I wish they would have just said Amity Island.
Yeah.
Like, we get the reference, just say you went
to Sandy Beach a real place?
I don't think so.
I went on Google Maps, and apparently there is a Sandy Beach near Oakland, but I'm thinking there could be several hundred Sandy Beaches throughout America.
There's probably as many Sandy Beaches as there are Springfields,
yeah.
Yeah.
But Homer packs every annoying tourist accessory, a lobster hat, fishnet Speedo Jr., wheelie shoes, which I feel were kind of a new invention at the time.
Yeah,
they and were pretty new.
An invisible dog leash, which I think this is the first time I'd ever seen one of those in my life.
I
saw them everywhere at fairs.
Yeah, I'd see them at fairs, and they were one of those things, like, as a kid, you'd be like, Mommy, I want it. And my parents were right to not buy it, because...
Within 10 seconds, you'd be
bored. Within
10
seconds, you're like, ha.
No one around you is impressed by it either. They're I get it, whatever.
Though, at the same places it sold the invisible dog leashes, the thing I really wanted were those... the things that look like it was a floating spigot that was sending out water on the ground. You ever see those?
No.
Oh, man. It was a fountain, but it looked like that a spigot attached to nothing was pouring out water.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
and it was really cool. I always wanted one of those. I was like, well, that's always going to be a conversations piece in our home. Unlike a dog leash. The one animation knock I'll give on this episode, which has some of the best animation the series ever had, but the framing of the shot to reveal Homer's luggage tips the joke too early. When Bart says, oh, we're not going to do that, Mom, you already see the lobster head.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Like, it should have been a little tighter, but I get it in the aspect ratio they were in the placement of Bart on the bed. There was probably no real way to do that, I don't think. But that's just my complaint. Wes Archer really needs to get it together.
Well, he's going nowhere in this business.
They talk on the commentary, actually, that this was a huge extra work for them of just like, the Simpsons go to a ton of new places. Do you know how hard that is?
All new characters.
Yeah, but they really embraced it. And I think probably they got extra effort just because, like, if you tell lifelong animators to parody classic Disney animation, they are going to put in the extra effort.
Yeah, they'll kill themselves doing it.
And then Abe gets his left with the pets.
And remember, every morning give one bowl of kibble to Santa's little helper. Do you want me to write any of this down?
No, I ain't senile dad, blast it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Grandpa.
Wait a minute. What was that last thing you said? Grandpa's little helper? What's that? Which one of you is the mailman?
Pets look at each other.
I feel like that's as humanistic as Matt Groening would let them be. The cats look at each other like, we're going to die. But
they're never referenced again in this episode, right?
No,
there's never a cutback to Grandpa. Yeah.
Unlike Grandpa turning into a woman in Cape Fear, there's no cutback like that. But I just... I laughed out loud of just the smash cut to Grandpa's face. Like, his listening face is just, like, so dumb and, like, just empty. I just love it. I mean, that face.
It's great.
Also, I have a lot of experience having house sat for pets, or pets sat for friends, and had my pet sat. You don't need to stay there.
No.
Like, I literally just give my keys to one of my apartment neighbors and be like, just come by once a day. You know, make sure there's food, and if the litter looks bad, scoop it. That's it. You don't need to have, like, Grandpa there the entire time.
Yeah, well, with a dog, maybe. Yeah. Well, even then, you just visit twice a day.
Yeah, walk it.
I only cat sat once as an adult, and it was for this couple who, they're like, here, we'll give you $200 to just stay at our apartment all weekend, because they were extra worried about their cat, and they were going to go camping together, and, like, I was there for one day, and the cat got in, like, this, just in a regular cat fight, but he had a cut, like, on his chest, and then was, but a little one, but he was trying to lick it.
Oh, man.
But so then I kept seeing him, like, go, and I thought, like, is your jaw broken? What happened to you? Like, I was terrified. And then the couple just came back the next day early because they had a giant fight on their camping trip and then broke up the next week.
So. Oh, shit.
It was really
and nice. They didn't have to bother with cat custody because it died of that infection.
No.
And he was asleep at the switch again.
They still gave me the $200. Sweet. I was like, you don't got to give me this. They're like, no. We did it for you. So
we're not going to be using it for dates.
Then the rest of the act is just a bunch of great observation of family road trips, which I as a kid, even in 1994, I could identify with all of these.
Yeah.
Like I love the dough when they all get into traffic together.
Yeah.
Like, that's really cute. And then Homer's was like, I've got a strategy. It's just honk. And then everybody starts honking.
And a lot of this, I feel, was pulled from the writer's memories of road trips in the 60s and 70s, because there's a parody of Stuckey's, which I've never been to a Stuckey's.
Yeah.
There are these roadside sort of novelty shops where you buy a pecan log, you buy, like, little tchotchkes. All I know of Stuckey's is the parody Snuckey's in Sam and Max Hit the Road.
Yes,
where
yeah.
There's a bunch of identical Snuckey's with a guy who just wears different, like, stuff on his face and everyone, the clerk.
That's how I found out about Stuckey's as well, because in the comic book Sam and Max Hit the Road, they just say Stuckey's in that one.
Yeah.
Steve Perrell doesn't care. But in the commercially produced video game, they got to change it to Snuckey's. Flickies, though, I like the Flickies. There aren't others for 25,000 miles, which I think would put it in, like, the Pacific Ocean or something.
Yeah, and this implies that the Simpsons have driven at least 700 miles. So 10 hours of driving, like, liberally, if they're going 70 miles an hour the entire way.
Wow, yeah. But the Flickies, I never got to go to a Stuckey's either. Mm-hmm. Those Stuckey's ads, they are great at getting kids.
Yeah.
I even tried to, like, okay, I'll find a good Stuckey's ad. It's like, there aren't any. They didn't make TV ads because they count on billboards on the road. But I did find a video of, like, walking around Stuckey's in 2005. And it really is, like, if you've been to a Cracker Barrel, it's like the general store that's attached to the Cracker Barrel of just, like, folksy bullshit you can buy along with getting, like, an okay diner food.
Yeah.
Though, in the video, they just casually go by, well, and here's all the Confederate flag merchandise. Pretty cool. It's just like, doodly-doo, nothing to see there. It's just folksy, guys. It's simply
folksy. Old-timey Confederacy.
But I definitely did that as a kid of asking my dad or mom, like, can we stop here? And they're just like, no, we're not going to stop here. They knew the signs had gotten me. You know, more often, it was just like, oh, actually, the big one for me was KFC buffets, because I'd only ever seen those on the road. There was like three ever on the like road trips we went on. I was like, we gotta go a buffet KFC, and then we go, and it's KFC. It's just all you can eat KFC food. It's not particularly awesome.
It seems like that would be a downgrade from regular KFC. Just a bunch of warm, wet chicken sitting in a little cooker.
But all the sides, you can have all their mashed potatoes can eat, which, like, whatever chemicals they put in those mashed potatoes, I love the taste of them. I'm salivating now thinking about those.
Oh, they visit the Five Corners, which does not exist. The Four Corners do exist.
Yes.
And that's Utah, Colorado, Arizona, and New Mexico.
That is indeed, man.
Shining more light on where the hell are they in
America. Yeah, it doesn't really give a clue, because they are 700 miles from home when they get there, or even more than that.
Well, when they get on this highway, it's to another state anyway, so it's all just so vague. You have no clue where they are. But as a kid, I kept thinking, like, I know I looked at a map after this, like, where would the five states meet? Where would they, like, they don't. There's nowhere five states meet. It does make me want to visit that Four Corners Monument. According to my research, there is nothing else there. Like, not even electricity. They don't have stuff.
It's just a giant plaque on the ground, like, welcome to the borders.
It's a tourist trap. Yeah. It is. Also, well, so they do a cute little joke about taking fruits and vegetables across the borders, which
Mr. Wembley
Mr. Wembley works there too.
Where was Mr. Wembley before?
Mr. Wembley, it happened again.
It could have been another mister, I think.
I wondered why that was. Apparently, it's just to protect from, like, you'd bring insects from another state, and it really, at the time, it was really only California that was like, don't bring your fruits and vegetables into California, which, again, it is the top agricultural producer in the world.
Now I think it's just like, don't bring your mattress into our state because everybody has bed bugs now.
And then they tune into Alex Jones.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
I love that. My favorite thing to do when I used to drive in Ohio was, if I was in the middle of nowhere and it was nighttime, I would go to the AM radio dial and find the most insane Christian program I could find. Yes. And one of them, the one I remember the most, was this program all about prayer strategies, where it's like, you need to pray during, you need to avoid peak prayer hours because God is incredibly busy handling all of those prayers. Just like, you're attributing this kind of labor to a just supernatural, omnipotent being that he's actually like sorting through prayers and answering them. Like, God, it's great.
This Jesus pro tip will help you get your maximum high score of prayers.
You want to get in at maybe 3:30, that's a good prayer hour.
So wake yourself up at 4 in the morning, do prayer.
And it's also funny, they have an AM radio joke in here that in the next episode is all Rush Limbaugh, the king of AM radio. But this, the Christians took it over because the cool people went to FM. Yeah. So then AM's like, we gotta fill it with something. Okay, get the most hardcore Christians you can.
Yeah.
And that Vanessa Williams joke is directed at her, of just that she had been Miss America. It was then found out that, like, oh dear God, she's pose nude for photographs. Mm. The worst thing a human can do. And so she was then seen as evil, but at this time she had become a hit pop song chanteuse. And that's why she, but that, I also love a good Casey Kasem joke. That's always nice.
I do like the great fake out joke. It still works on me, or I still just get a huge laugh out of it, of the Simpsons car careening into a phone pool, then it pulls out to see them in the hotel room. That wasn't us.
Two Simpsons death fake outs in the same episode.
That's true.
Yeah, I love both of them. I definitely had a lot of road trip related anxiety, but my big one wasn't falling asleep or dying in a car crash like that. It was running out of gas. My biggest fear was, like, if my eye was on the gas tank the entire time we drove, and if it got to 75% empty, I would start pressuring my dad, like, we gotta stop. We gotta stop somewhere.
I'm sure you played a lot of Ghostbusters for the NES, and you knew what a pain in the ass that was.
I think I discussed this back on the episode where Homer had that dream sequence in the car, but I have had instances where I almost fell asleep at the wheel, because I used to do, like, full college course load days where, like, I went to Queens College, which was a commuter college, and it's like a 30-minute drive from my place to there, and I would just be like, I don't want to do this 4 days a week. I will just stuff everything into 2 days, which would mean 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And sometimes if you pull an all-nighter before you go, I am, like, dead at 10 p.m.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, there were points where it's like, I got to, like, pull over, get, like, a coffee or something, and it's like... Also, weird that that there's no panic involved with them seeing a car crash happen in front of their building.
They don't care that people just died.
Oh, good, it's not us. Boy,
I mean, I spread my college out around 8 years, a nice, nice thin paste. So
I got sleepy on the road, not at college. Yeah, it would take about 20 minutes to get to my community college. But no, my time getting sleepy on the road was when I did my epic Florida to California road trip.
Oh, man.
But it was that my friend and I were just cheap, that we're like, oh, man, if we didn't spend $200 on hotels, think of all the money we make. But though my friend also, he was extra driven, no pun intended, that he wanted to try to do it without even sleeping. He was like, no, we're going to drive cross country and we're not going to stop to sleep. Yeah. I was like, look, let's just stop at a rest area and nap. He's like, no, we're going to keep driving. I was like, Jesus Christ. I like that I did it to do it, but I think back now, I'd be like, I'll just put $100 on my credit card and fucking sleep.
Yeah. Was a man from the Guinness Corporation in the backseat with a clipboard?
You get.
I think he just wanted to brag about it forever. That dude sucked.
By the way, all this road trip stuff, this was an episode that I missed recording when it actually aired the first time, so I got it in syndication. Pretty much all of the cuts are from the road trip. The Stucky stuff and the fruits and vegetables were cut from syndication.
Yeah.
And they don't really, like, they're good jokes, but Bart on the Road does, like road stuff way better, I think.
It is, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's better observations of what it's like to be on a road trip, and it's, they have nothing to do with the plots, and Itchy and Scratchy Land is so plot heavy, like, you cut one explanation of something in Itchy and Scratchy Land, then other parts don't make sense, so maybe that's why they, like, stuffed the first stack so full of things that could be cut to give them options. And
I think I mentioned it on a previous episode, but this is the one episode I missed on its first night airing until I stopped watching the show. I don't know what I was doing, how I let this happen to myself, but I'll never forgive myself. I had to wait for the rerun to watch
this. You were
probably
so distraught at the hockey lockout.
What am I going to watch now? All right, I don't watch hockey.
You were checking TV Guide every week of like, is it this week? Is it this week?
And I knew it was going to be about Itchy and Scratchy Land. I was so sad.
Yeah, and that if I were pitching Simpsons scripts, I actually would pitch, like, I want to see the episode that explains what happened during that shortcut. That could fill an entire episode, whatever happened to them during this secret shortcut Homer takes of, like, that they have a missile stuck in the front, that they've replaced a wheel with a wooden wheel, and that they've lost the top of their car, and they've apparently driven through a chicken coop. they should cover that instead of what happened after Camp Krusty. Hmm.
It's good we don't see the car again, because they'd have to draw all that stuff on it.
Yeah, though I was impressed that when they park in the Itchy lot, that it is the same car design, that they kept that thing. So remember, we're in the Itchy lot, which was the opening bit on here. That was a reference to at Disneyland and at all Disney parks, and also at Universal parks, they section off the parking lots into things named after their famous characters. Classically, they had, like, Donald, Eeyore, Jiminy Cricket, Mickey, and Tinkerbell. Of, like, I'm in the Mickey one, I'm in the Timon one. And it's easier to keep track of your cars when, like, tens of thousands of people are parking cars every day there.
It kind of astounded me when I went to Disneyland for the first time that you get out of the car and then you have to take a 20-minute ride to the theme park. It's not a quick ride to get there.
But apparently the named parking lots aren't a thing anymore at Disneyland because they had to cut into their parking lot space to build more stuff. So instead they built, like, a gigantical 6-story tall parking structure called, like, the Mickey and Friends parking structure so that they could get back. Because as Chris mentioned a lot on the episode we did about defunct park rides, Anaheim, they only have so much space in Disneyland. They can't get more space around it, so cannibalizing the parking lot to build Cars Land or the Cars based stuff was what they had to do. So, but that still continues at the Disney World park. And also, I remember when I last went to Universal, you better believe I made sure we parked in the Spider-Man parking lot.
I wish they would have parked in the Rich Uncle Skeleton lot.
Well, and obviously that's also the joke that it's only two parking lots in the Itchy lot and the Scratchy lot.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
This all begins the string of both Westworld and Jurassic Park jokes.
Yes.
In that, in the helicopter, that's Jurassic Park. You have to take a helicopter to Jurassic Park, but nothing can possibly go wrong. That's Westworld.
We're now approaching our final destination, Itchy and Scratchy Land, the amusement park of the future where nothing can possibly go wrong. Possibly go wrong. That's the first thing that's ever gone wrong.
So, yeah, that's a reference to the poster for Westworld.
And the first trailer of it as well. Here's the classic trailer, or just 2 minutes in.
You know you'll enjoy your stay in Westworld.
Hold it.
The ultimate resort.
Let me do it this time.
Where nothing, Nothing can possibly go wrong.
I'm shot.
Go wrong.
Raw.
Go wrong.
Oh, my God.
Shut down. Shut down immediately.
Spoilers, guys. Come on.
That was in the original trailer. They're like, yeah, Josh Brolin gets shot. Yeah. He's dead. And yeah. It's,
so on the poster, that's the tagline is there. But as soon as possibly the word possibly appears, the text starts falling down the poster.
Which again shows you possibly fall. The word possibly fails just as in the poster. Westworld. The original one we're talking about here, the 70s film, not the I'm sure the show is very good. I haven't watched the HBO show.
It's all right.
It's all right, yeah. It's got boobs and death on it, right? Which, that's all HBO show needs to be good. The original Westworld was written and directed by Michael Crichton.
Yeah, yeah.
How?
And he did that in the late 70s, and it's an amazing idea of what if Disneyland was made for adults, and then what if the robots went mad and killed everybody. And
yes, also, what if you could fuck and kill the robots,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, what if you could fuck and kill robots?
Yeah, I just saw this for the first time for this episode. I wanted to watch it finally just for this episode, and also it's a good movie. And it is great.
Yeah.
It's also, like, I think it's having your cake and eating it, too, because it's also giving the audience a Western of sorts,
where
a lot of the scenes could be read at face value as a Western. There's lots of... There's a big bar fight. There's, like, a scene with... at a bordello, things like that. But I was also kind of surprised that, I mean, spoilers, the robots go insane. There's no deeper meaning to this movie. There's no deep sci-fi plot, just like, oh, all the robots are going insane. That shouldn't happen. Oh, I guess we're all dead now.
Yes.
There's no deeper meaning to it, but I love it. And it reminds me a lot of Terminator. So,
oh, yes.
Terminator 1, it's this, like, super great sci-fi time travel story, but the Act 3 is just, like, someone is being chased by a robot skeleton. This movie is exactly the same, where it's, like, this great sci-fi story, Act 3, someone is being chased by a robot cowboy. And it's great. Like, I loved it.
It's incredible. We talked a ton about Westworld, also in The Boy Who Knew Too Much, but the chase scene specifically. But Yul Brynner is just so great playing a robotic version of himself,
they
which is
barely
wonderful.
Had to do anything to make him look robotic. Just like put contacts in, and boom.
Yeah, and it's just beautiful. His chase of the wormy guy who you think he'd be the one killed.
Thought he died.
Not handsome James Brolin, not Josh Brolin. And doesn't James Brolin look just like Christian Bale? It's like, well, you're a Christian Bale.
Oh, you're
Bale
right. Wow. Yeah.
But I think that's part of. I'll give Michael Crichton thumbs up for that. I wish it wasn't spoiled in the trailer, but it's a great misdirect of he casts the movie star, James Brolin, and then kills him for the third act. And it makes it even more of an underdog thing of like, oh, the wormy guy who didn't even want to punch a robot in the saloon, he's the one getting chased by the unstoppable Yul Brynner bots.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful, but the arrival in the helicopter obviously is the arrival in the helicopter in Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Though structurally, Westworld and Jurassic Park are kind of the same thing. Like, Crichton really ripped himself off when he did Jurassic Park. Clearly, it was just like, well, Westworld didn't work. Like, Westworld wasn't a hit.
Right.
And so, I'm sure it did fine. Yeah. But so then he left Hollywood and just wrote his own books. And to then be made into movies. And Jurassic Park similarly is a theme park where the attractions go crazy. But in this case, it's really cool dinosaurs instead of robots.
Mm-hmm.
But the arrival of the helicopter as a continuity dork did bother me. Like, well, how'd everybody... So they park
all those
and then
cars,
everybody gets in a helicopter and then they...
And also... It's before you even buy tickets to get into the theme park.
Yeah.
So it seems very inefficient cost-wise to fly people to the gate where they buy their tickets. What if they decide,
exactly.
And they just wasted the price of a helicopter trip.
Free helicopter ride, right.
Yeah.
But what is the reference of the itchy and scratchy skulls? The island is shaped like that. Is it King Kong?
Kong is Skull Island. Like,
I couldn't find a picture of Skull Island because of that fucking movie.
Yeah.
It makes it impossible to find a picture of what it looked like in that 1932 King Kong. But was it a skull?
It's skull is shaped. In later King Kongs, it's much more obvious. Like, this is literally a skull.
It actually looks more like the Jurassic Park logo, but with itchy and scratchy, you know, just like the dinosaur skeleton silhouette.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, too. It's like, oh, it's a mountainside that looks like itchy and scratchy, and then on top of that is Disneyland. Like, that scene makes no sense. It's a very funny scene, and it's a good end of an act break, but... It makes very little sense in the world of it.
I don't know when we should broach this topic exactly, but with there already having been a Duff Gardens episode, I felt a little bit confused the first time I watched this. It was like, oh, I thought Duck Gardens was their Disney World, even though I wasn't really familiar with Busch Gardens at the time that I had seen it. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Busch Gardens, and it is like, yeah, the beer thing is makes it more in Busch Gardens camp, but there is things like, what is it? Not We Are the World, but it's a small world. Yeah, just things, and the Seven Duffs. It's like, oh, these are all Disneyland things. Kind of mixing metaphors here, I guess.
Yeah, right? No, I mean, they have so many ways they want to make fun of Disneyland. Like, obviously, if you're an animation dork or if you're an entertainment professional, like you're obsessed with Disneyland or you have thoughts on Disneyland and making fun of the lines. Like they've done 8 million Disneyland jokes, and this was just their most direct.
Yeah. I mean, Abe and Old Bunny went to Disneyland rode a roller coaster. Yeah. But just like Duff Gardens, Homer uses the same strategy: one adult and four children.
That's right. That's the first time I caught that.
Me too.
Where he bought a ticket. Oh, he classifies himself as a child, which I guess he kind of is.
And I am a college student.
And then we get a joke about Disney dollars. So the Itchy and Scratchy Land money it's a joke on Disney dollars that they felt was a scam, where you say, like, you buy Disney dollars, which are one-to-one currency that can only be spent in the park, and they have characters on it, and it's fun money.
Yeah.
And not every place takes Disney dollars.
Not even the clerk could sell it to him, though. She's like, it's fun.
Yes, though this joke doesn't work if it works the same as in Disney parks, which is, when you leave a Disney park, you can exchange back the money. You're not stuck with it. But then
I didn't expect that, actually.
They do that, and actually, I thought Disney dollars had been around a long time. They were introduced in 1987.
Wow.
Like, they were 7 years old when they did this joke.
Is it literally just fun? Or is it like, do you get discounts if you use Disney dollars?
I don't know if there's a discount. I think really it is that they realize, what if we could make somebody's $20 become a $20 bill that they might not spend and they'd keep to themselves? All like, because definitely Disney collectors will buy a $20 Disney dollar
and then keep it
forever to be like, well, this is my Disney dollar.
It only goes up in value.
There's new characters on the dollars this year. Let me buy one of each.
Though the Disney dollars were discontinued May 14th, 2016.
Wow.
You can't get them anymore. Though if you bring them to the parks, they will still accept it.
So. Up next, we meet my secret favorite character from this episode. Okay. There's no need to murmur, man.
It is the
William Daniels-esque Hank Azaria character. William Daniels, obviously, the voice of Kit, the car, Knight Rider, and
Mr. Feeny
in Boy Meets World. He's doing an impression of him, but I love, there's no need to murmur, man.
I'm a little tired of Simpsons jokes of, what are you talking about? You're totally lying. He's like, gotta go.
Yeah.
Those gotta go jokes get old, but I do love his directly calling Marge's thing murmuring. He's like, there's no need for that. Yeah. And that
the cat was breathing comfortably in the next scene.
Though I'm surprised that first I love another thing I noticed for the first time, the way Homer is looking at Marge when she's complaining about that. He's like, oh, come on. He has a face of like half-lidded of, come on. But I also wonder, like, Marge should never be allowed in Itchy and Scratchy Land by the Myers family, because they're like, hey, you almost killed my company. I would have this place if you got your way,
Marge. I never thought of that. That's so true. She was a minor celebrity because of her crusade against Itchy and Scratchy.
They literally call her to get tips. I'm like, well, what would you do? Yeah. Like, Russ Meyer Jr. knows who Marge Simpson is.
It's Roger Meyer. Russ Meyer is the guy who likes boobs.
Damn it. Roger Meyer.
The complaining squirrel wouldn't make it into that store.
That's right. Yeah. They should have made a toy. Don't do that. Don't do that. When Bart and Lisa are like kicking each other, another little animation touch I love is Maggie is pumping her fist just to show that, like, Maggie has also been affected by the violence. So obviously, from Marge versus Itchy and Scratchy, we know Maggie has been affected.
She's prone to violence. We'll see her shoot Mr. Burns later in the season.
Spoiler.
Yes.
Oh, well, then they drop Maggie off in a ball pit, which I get that it really would be a death pit for babies. Like, they'll starve to death. They will die. But I would love a 40-foot deep ball pit to play in now, as long as they could promise me it is not full of fecal matter.
That's never going to be true.
I know. There really are ball pits or toilets.
Yeah, surprised they didn't go there with that. Her being in the ball pit, that's it.
Ball pits are a litter box for children.
And somehow that the buoyancy or whatever of this ball pit, that sends them all the way to the front. I don't know if that's the way ball pits work, but anyway.
I also did like this little scene at the restaurant.
I'll have a brain burger with extra pus, please.
Bart?
Eyeball stew.
Homer, we just got here and already I'm mortified beyond belief by your embarrassing behavior.
I was just ordering a cheeseburger, Mom. They have violent names for everything here.
Oh, I see. All right. I'll have the baby guts.
Lady, you disgust me.
Huh. Mom, that's feel.
Definitely a joke I did not get as a kid because a working class family, I was never exposed to veal or even knew what veal was.
No, I'd never even tried it. It's I don't think I've ever had it. By the time I could have bought it, I knew what it was. Yeah. And in case you don't know, veal is tortured baby calves that then have like softer meat, which also I know, Bob, the vegetarian, like, oh.
I'm disgusted by all of you.
If you have the line of like, well, I won't have veal, it's like, oh, but you will have like an adult cow smashed in the head. Yeah. And chopped up. And
they got to live a longer, worse life.
Yeah, a longer, worse life.
But Bob has brought enough gazpacho for all.
It's cold. It's cold.
Don't
it's great.
Friends with salad.
So I have to say, one of my pet peeves is going to restaurants and having them be too cute about naming things to the point where you don't know what things are.
Yes.
And I actually experienced that I could have possibly been arrested, I think, if this went a different way, where I went to a brewery in Portland, I forget what it was, maybe last year, and the bathrooms were like, hops and barley. It was like not even indicating what could be male, what could be female. I go into one of them, don't even notice that there's no urinals in it. I'm like, oh, just use a stall. And I'm sitting down using the bathroom, and the door opens, and two women are having a conversation, and I'm like, oh, shit. And it's just like, I'm just going to wait this out until the women leave so I don't scare them.
I don't know what hops and barley. Yeah. Like, I don't know which one. Obviously, those are the only two genders, hops and barley. Like, well, that's a joke.
It might not have been hops and barley, but it was two equally nondescript descriptors for gender or sex, rather. Yeah. But I was like, I'm just going to sit in here and wait this out until this conversation is over. And it turns out they're having a real heart-to-heart about this woman's job.
Oh, God.
And I'm just like, after 5 minutes, I'm just like, excuse me, I'm not a pervert. I went to the wrong bathroom. I'm just going to leave now. And they were laughing. And they're like, it's okay. It's okay. It's like, I don't know which bathroom this is. I'm sorry. So
somebody thinks they're a barley.
Yeah. So it was that day I learned I was a hops man.
Oh, I love that.
I'm really glad that they handled it well.
Hearing that clip was the first time I noticed the itchy and scratchy theme music in the variation on it.
Yeah.
That's such a well-observed thing that the music that plays everywhere when you go to Disneyland is like variations on classic Disney music and in the restaurants too. Yeah.
Did they not have Lisa ordering something at the restaurant?
No, she didn't. She knew it was veal, but it was Bart and Homer order it, and then Marge orders it. We don't know what Lisa ordered.
The waiter leaves. Lisa can't order.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, Lisa didn't get to order anything.
What a terrible waiter.
Well, hey, he's a very principled waiter. Which, honestly, if you did that at Disneyland, you'd be fired immediately.
Or I think any restaurant. Like, you got to just bring the food, but I guess it's like a precursor to become a vegetarian. Maybe maybe the names of the food here kind of started her on that path.
I feel bad for Marge that she tries to, even when she tries to have fun with gross names, she gets judged. Like, man, she can't even.
That
she
is
can't
sad.
Even fun
yeah,
being gross with them. I love when she's looking at the map. It's one of the first things I do every time I've gone to a park. I'm just like, well, I'm gonna just look at the map and see everything. Like, where am I gonna go next? Ooh, look at all the different lands.
It's also another Marge touch. I think she chose the baby guts because it sounded cute, just like, oh, that's cute, baby guys.
And then we get the introduction of the robot parade.
Oh, look, it's the 12 noon robot parade. Hurry up, or we'll have to wait for the 12:05 parade.
So that's a parody of the Main Street Electrical Parade. Let's hear some of that music. It's pure madness to me, this music. If I ever go on a killing spree, this would be playing in my head, I think. So go ahead, let's hear some of that. Oh, yeah. Pure 70s bliss.
I love it.
It's great. It's actually great. And I was actually working on notes in the bar I do research in drinking. And I left that play, and I realized I was listening to like 15 minutes of it while I was taking notes. I'm like, people are going to think I'm insane if my headphones fall off. You're like, get this guy out of here. He's had too much. But yeah, I want to give some information about this.
Yes.
It's a very, very iconic Disney thing, but it's sort of jumped around a lot from park to park. So it ran from 1972, hence the music, until 1996. And then it went to Disney California Adventure from 2001 to 2009. And then to the Magic Kingdom in Florida from 2010 to 2016. And now, as of this recording, it is back at Disneyland for a limited time engagement. So it just kind of moves all those old like electronics and parts and light bulbs all get moved around.
One of the big tricks of Disney is that they say like, oh, it's a limited time. They're faking that it's limited, but they'll never stop doing the Main Street Electrical Parade. It's just they cycle it around to make it special. But I... watching it, I love it. I like how stupid and 70s it is. And
I love
how,
the 70s
garish
music.
And ugly it is. And that's if they have a fancier parade, I'd be like, eh, I don't. I like, but that is one of the another of the fun things about Disneyland that other in the Disney parks that other parks don't do, which is like this is a continuing experience. We're gonna have live shows all the time. You're gonna walk around and the Dapper Dans are gonna be singing "Baby on Board," and you're gonna have full on parades multiple times a day. You don't have to wait for the one parade a year in your crappy small town. They're going to do multiple parades. And the joke about the 1205 parade is that they would do the electrical parade multiple times a day. Mm-hmm. Which is a good thing. If you miss it as... If you're there like, well, I miss a parade, it's nice knowing there's more. Though, currently at Disneyland, they actually only do the electrical parade twice a day. 8:45 p.m. and 10:45 p.m. Which, obviously, you want to watch the electrical parade in the dark to really appreciate the lights.
Yeah, I only went to Disneyland... Disney World once. Mm-hmm. And I avoided the parades because it was like... Any time I'm standing still watching something is a time that I'm not on a roller coaster or some other fun ride.
That's true. Yeah, I couldn't watch. I don't think I watched the entirety of the parade. Yeah. It was more like, well, also it was probably the late one of just, well, we're going home. Yeah. Let's stop and look at this parade. We're so tired from everything else. Like all we can do now is look at pretty lights. Which, hey, seeing Pete's dragon with a bunch of like green light bulbs all over him is pretty fun. And so the Itchy and Scratchy Parade is not as involved as the Electric Light Parade, but it's where we first meet the animatronics and get some important plot points.
Wow, this is so much like my dreams. It's scary.
Oh, look at that cute little baby axe.
It's cute, but I'm sure it's very sharp and probably dirty.
Dirty, maybe. Dangerous? Hardly. These are the latest state-of-the-art animatronic robots. They have sensors that ensure they only attack each other, never the guests.
See all that stuff in there? That's why your robot never worked.
I feel that a later, worse episode would have a cutaway to Homer building a bad robot or Homer having a bad robot. The fact that they cut at that line is great. A lot of self-control.
I just love the... It's a real ADR line. I'm certain that's not what Marge originally said in that
scene.
Yeah,
that's true,
too. But I love it that it doesn't need a cutaway. It creates a vision in your head of, like, Homer making a robot that's empty inside. He's like, why doesn't my robot work?
Just the shell of a robot, yeah.
And then Marge can kind of do an I told you so on that. And it also let them do Terminator vision, which they had last done when Homer was looking for a man for Selma in Principal Charming.
I do feel like we're dwelling on this joke for a while, but Marge was not being mean-spirited. She wants the family to learn things on this vacation, or as Marge says, vacation, which I love. Vacation.
Vacation. I like, Marge is not the bad guy here. I think they do an all right job of setting up, like, Marge just wants a good time. It's just what they want. And
this does give context to Mr. Murmur Man. Yeah, like, when I was watching the episode before, like, I remembered there's no need to Murmur Man, but I was like, that's weird that he's just in the episode for this, but no, he's actually here to tell you the entire conceit of the episode.
Yeah. And Westworld does not even go this far to explain what went wrong. It's just like, something went wrong. They don't say, here's why it went wrong, or here's why they're not attacking the people. And there's also no solution to kill the robots.
No.
You just have to try to destroy them as much as you can until they stop moving.
Then they go on Log Ride, which they have some clever sign jokes in this. This is not one of them.
Me too.
It's like,
I noticed that too.
Like,
it was like, where's the joke?
Where's the joke? Yeah, that the obviously it is a parody of Splash Mountain down to the banjo-y music playing when it starts, though they just remove the racism from it.
It's very observational. It reminds me of Splash Mountain and Pirates of the Caribbean, where it's like, it's just a very slow-moving ride where you look at things and there's one giant drop or one thing that happens at the end and then that's it. I mean, Splash Mountain's the same way.
Yeah, it's very hurt, and also the herky jerkiness of it.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, I like, in general, I like the simplicity of log ride, of the log ride genre of park rides, because you've just got one thing. You're not getting thrown around by a roller coaster in every direction. It's just the anticipation of one big thing. Like, oh man, this big thing's coming. That's what's fun on the Jurassic Park ride is basically just Splash Mountain as well.
Oh, yeah.
Except you're seeing pretty bad animatronic dinosaurs.
And they spray water at you.
Yeah, and they spray water at you like, it's Dilophosaurus. And then a really bad T-Rex will bite at you and then boom you down.
But I actually got stuck on Splash Mountain in 1999. Oh, it was not as traumatic as it sounds. It was right before the big drop.
Oh.
Things just stopped moving and we're like, what's going on? And the speaker comes on and it's like, don't touch the water, don't move, people will escort you off the ride. And it took them like maybe 15 minutes to get us. And I remember when a person was helping me out of the ride, my hand was wet. And they were like, you're not supposed to touch the water. I'm like, it's called Splash Mountain.
Yeah.
I got wet on Splash Mountain.
I'm sorry.
But I just remember it being really surreal where there's just so much artifice and so much atmosphere of Disneyland. When they take you behind the ride, it's just scary and weird.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's just all like this... all asphalt and stuff.
Well, that's a lot of the great stuff in this episode are observations of what they imagine behind the scenes of Disneyland is like,
yeah.
Of just the scary. There's more SS officers in their imagination. But I love Splash Mountain, too. The moment of going down where you just hear, Briar Patch.
Right.
Did you ever get to ride it for real? Or
we
was
did.
That
we did. I think we went back the next day and they fixed it. But we got a ticket to get on the front of any line like instantly. And
awesome.
We went to Space Mountain because I had the longest line. And I love Space Mountain so much.
Space Mountain's better than Splash Mountain, and it's the best of the three of the mountains. I guess really there's four.
Matterhorn
just
Big Thunder
balls,
Mountain.
Man. Big Thunder Mountain's fun, but it's just like it's a baby's roller coaster, which is why I like it.
Oh, me too. I hate real roller coasters.
Yes. Yeah. And same with Space Mountain. Is a real roller coaster, but it's in the dark, so I don't know I'm on a roller coaster.
You bringing up Space Mountain makes me think of the wrestler Ric Flair, who calls his penis Space Mountain, and he always says, oldest ride, longest line.
Which
means a lot of women want to wait on a very long line to get on his old
clothes for prepares today. Sorry.
The animation of them dodging death on that ride, but it's also like, that ride must murder people.
Yeah.
I think the most dangerous thing is, after all that, they just get shot onto mattresses.
Yes, yeah. The
like haphazardly placed.
During the fall, a buzzsaw cuts the thing in half, and they have to dodge it and then fall on mattresses that. It's not a complete covering of mattresses.
Yeah, also the spikes, when they hit the spikes, they're perfectly aligned to know that two kids are in front and two adults are in back.
Yes,
so they almost gouge out everyone's eyes at once.
Yeah, but it's beautiful animation. Again, this is so good. So good animation.
And thinking back to where Maggie goes, it's interesting that they built that in because I'm sure they're asking themselves, what will we do with Maggie and all throughout all this action? Like, where is she going to go?
You could clip those bits out, and I doubt on this show, we probably would be asking, where's Maggie? But to a regular viewer, they wouldn't be asking that. They'd be like, who cares? We don't care where Maggie is.
I think later in the show, they don't get Maggie back from the daycare when everyone leaves.
I guess it's implied that after they kill the robots, that they get Maggie back at that point.
Yeah.
But and then Marge and Homer decide they're going to Parents Island, which is it's beautiful. I love it. And that then they go to Itchy and Scratchy 70s Disco. First time I caught the sign joke of established 1980.
Yes, that's great.
That joke.
Before we go on, though, you don't have it recorded. That's fine. But my line of the show is, part of spending time together as a family is spending time apart as individuals. It's Marge in the nicest way saying, I don't want to be around my kids anymore.
In the nicest way ever. I did like that. Yeah. That is a great one. Sorry. Here, I'll cut it in right now.
You know, part of spending time together as a family is spending time apart as individuals.
Parents Island.
Uh-huh.
But that she is already ready to dump the idea of spending time together.
Yeah, like, she's like, let's get drunk and
well, because one ride was too exhausting for her. This is also my mom at theme park. She kind of told me eventually what the issue was, that we'd always say like, oh, you're such a scaredy cat. But no, it was that she has really bad motion sickness, like really bad, and that she always underplayed because everybody, and I include myself on it, would doubt her on that. I'm just like, motion sickness. We've all been dizzy. She's like, no, I really can't do anything. And you're just like, oh, God, Mom.
And your disease.
Yeah, I feel really bad looking back on it. But that's kind of how it would be. That's actually how it was the last time I went to theme parks with my mom. She was good on a lot of rides. But she didn't know what Star Tours was. And when we sat down for Star Tours, I said, oh, it's like Back to the Future. She's like, oh, no. Like, she had to lay down for 20 minutes afterwards. And she was done for the day. She's like, I'm not riding anything else.
A bench.
What a bummer.
It pretty much was her feeling. But, okay, the 70s disco looks like John Travolta. It is a fun joke, and basically, the decade of 84 to 94 is full of John Travolta starring in garbage and being unfamous. Yeah. Like, the Look Who's Talking films were the biggest things he'd been in, and that wasn't good.
And at this point, this is the end of the Look Who's Talking trilogy, where it's like, now it's dogs.
Yes.
Yeah, 93 was his last movie before Pulp Fiction. That was Look Who's Talking Now.
So that's the problem, though, of this joke. The joke implies that John Travolta is so unsuccessful that he'd work as a bartender in Itchy and Scratchy Land.
He'd work as a lookalike of himself.
Yes, but 2 weeks after this episode aired, Pulp Fiction premieres and will completely revitalize John Travolta's career, bigger than ever afterwards. He would start earning like $20 million a movie and funneling that all into Scientology.
This joke had 12 days to live before it was DOA. Yes. I think that's less time than the Magic Johnson from being on The Simpsons to him confessing about his AIDS.
You're right.
So, but I mean, it premiered at Cannes in May, and I'm sure there's a lot of buzz about it then.
Oh,
but,
definitely.
This is like, it was a very slow, growing movie.
But they were probably writing this episode in like, early winter or whatever.
Yeah, in like January or something. If this aired in September, they at best would have been working on it in January. So when this aired, definitely the Hollywood insider writers and directors of The Simpsons probably knew Pulp Fiction was... Well, nobody knew Pulp Fiction was actually going to be like a box office hit and a giant cultural touchstone.
Right.
They probably just thought like, John Travolta's in a good independent-ish movie. Good for him. He's not going to be famous again, though. He's not going to star in Broken Arrow and Face Off and Michael and...
Phenomenon.
That's one.
Okay, let's clear the runway for the greatest
this
Simpsons joke
ever
written.
This is my line of the show.
I mean, great joke or greatest joke? I don't even know.
I love it so much. Well, let's have the best line jingle first.
That's the joke.
Look at all this great stuff, Elise. Cool, personalized plates. Barclay, Barry, Bert, Bort. Oh, come on, Bort.
Mommy, buy me a license plate.
No, come along, Bort.
Are you talking to me?
No, my son is also named Bort.
Yes, so great. Okay, so I said the Marge thing was line of the show. That's still true. This transcends line of the show to basically line of the universe. Whenever I watch this episode, I get giddy during the scene. Like, it's gonna happen. He's gonna say more. It's so perfect. It's so perfect.
It's such a pointless, silly line, but that it creates a world that Bort is a more popular name than Bart.
Yes. And also, I'm sure, I mean, we all have regular schmegular white guy names. Yes. Going to a gift shop, we would always find our own names on license plates. If you have a slightly off name, a slightly, like, non-white guy name, you're not going to find it. I'm sure those kids went through hell. If you did it as a listener, let us know, because I know a lot of people that could never find their name on keychains or license plates or whatever.
Equally rare is Barclay.
Barclay.
I've never heard.
Well, that's
Barclay's
what's so great. Yeah. But Bort is the Bort. Well, so I actually did go through this a little bit. Like, Henry is a lame white guy name.
Yes.
But as a kid, if I haven't mentioned it before on the show, my nickname was Max. Mm-hmm. Like, my family, my mom is kind of getting out of the practice of calling me Max just because I am Henry Gilbert III, but I didn't want to be Henry.
Oh.
And they didn't want me to be Henry either, my parents, but they're like, well, it's a family name.
What else are you going to name him?
Yeah. So, Steve? Henry Sr. and Jr. say so. So.
But so from my birth, I was called Max, and I went by Max all the time. And it's probably the name my mom and dad would have given to me were they not, like, bound by it. And actually, it's why I was given Sam and Max comics way early, because my cool uncle who lived in California, he went to cool comic book stores and found this independent comic called The Adventures of Sam and Max. And I just loved it, getting that so much. So I would go through this, like, not only at theme parks, but also at, Toys R Us, of seeing, like, oh, personalized things. Where's Max? Like, there never was Max.
Max is too radical of a children's name.
And so I have experienced that. I'd love to hear from listeners who also, if they went through that, it shows you the limits of capitalism that they can't. They're like, look, we maybe will get 3 kids ever who have this name, and they're not going to buy these things.
Yeah,
so.
And I'm sure they're all terrible too. Like, oh, it's all going to be kind of middle class white people visiting this park because of just pure economics. So let's make it for those people.
But
they're the best.
Just the name Bort has grown so far beyond this thing. There's a great Slate article from a few years ago I read about About the Bort love from Simpsons fanatics. Bill Oakley even has a comment in there of like, we thought it was funny, but we definitely didn't think it would be this popular. And then they talk about the phenomenon that actually getting a Bort license plate is not easy. And they find like several people who have the Bort license plate in their state.
Wow.
Because you can be the only one in your state with a Bort license plate. And the one guy they met who's like, he had Bort in one state, then moved to Austin, Texas, and he had to wait 3 years to get a Bort plate, and then he finally did. And he said that at first he was afraid to even put it on his car because someone's going to steal this. So he put it in his window. So it's a very interesting story of the Bort plates. And if you go to Universal's, at least I can say this for the Orlando one, they in their sections where they have personalized name things, there are Borts. At first, they had a space, an empty space for Bort to show that they are out of Bort plates. But then you can just buy Bort things. I bought a Bort keychain, a Bort name keychain for Michael Graham, who he's the guy in my life who does the most Bort references.
His straight past name is Bort.
Yes,
I have to say, like, we all talk about how we speak the secret Simpsons language that 9 million other people speak, but just saying Bort or referencing Bort will just instant laughter. I remember we were at our old job and talking about the Naruto sequel Boruto, and I was just like, my son is also named Boruto. And one of our coworkers just started cracking up. So, I mean, it wasn't a great joke, but you can easily unlock so much humor just by using the word Bort in some way. Or my son is also named blank.
It's such a beautiful Simpson-y non sequitur that isn't like a joke per se, but it just creates such a weird world. I love Bort is so great. And then I was shocked that right after Bort comes another joke I love.
Oh, yes.
Who are all these characters?
Well, you're probably too young to remember the short-lived Itching, Scratching Friends Hour. They had to come up with some friends. There's Disgruntled Goat, Uncle Ant, Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, yeah. They weren't very funny.
I don't know. Disgruntled Goat had his moments.
This was the first time I got the joke, Uncle Ant.
Yeah. Uncle Ant?
As in, Ant. It's the.
I guess it is that bad. I just got it now. Yeah.
It's a lame joke. I'm not saying it's good, but Uncle I get Ant. It as,
okay,
as a wordplay. As an animation dork, I love the implication of the Itchy and Friends Hour, Itchy and Scratchy and Friends Hour, because I know from watching like every rerun of cartoons that there's, say, original Flintstones, and then there are there's the Flintstones Comedy Hour, the Pebbles and Bam Bam Hour, all these spin-off-y ones that add extra characters. Like, these characters really suck.
Yeah,
except for Captain Caveman.
Like, Pebbles and Bam Bam had a rock band with extra characters in
it? Well, yes, because in the 70s, teen cartoons were really big, so like, well, then we gotta age up Pebbles and Bam Bam to teens and have them basically have Josie and the Pussycat style adventures.
I mean, I want to hope that Ku Klux Klan was a villain, but given Roger Meyer Sr.'s predilections, who knows?
True. Yeah. That's true. Which, but I also like, it feels like a moment I have absolutely had at theme parks of seeing, of being the dork with other people like, I don't even know this character. Who's this duck? And you're like, well, actually in this episode, in this one Donald Duck cartoon, he meets this character and that's who this is. This is Gladstone Goose or the big one was at
Horace Horse Caller.
Or at Tokyo Disney Sea, which is an amazing theme park. Book your flight to Tokyo and then go to a theme park. But it really is great. But at it, they have some of the weirdest things. I was like, they have multiple, like, wolf toys are super popular. They're like, well, let's get every wolf in it. I was like, I never thought I'd see a toy of the big bad wolf from the Three Little Pigs short, but
with
they
the weird
had
hat?
It. Yes, yeah, and his like patchy overalls, like I have been Bart at theme parks of saying, "Oh, you probably don't remember this, but it's from this cartoon."
I know Max from Goof Troop is all around Japan Disneyland.
Yes, yeah,
I don't know why. I mean,
so one Max you can get at theme parks.
Oh yeah,
you're right. Tokyo Disney Sea is beautiful, though. I really love my trip there. I would go there again. I want to go my next trip to Japan. I want to go actually to Universal Osaka, but I want to plan it around the opening of the Nintendo land, though a year after that. So when the lines have gone down, if you think lines are bad at American theme parks, the Japanese know how to line up for shit. Like, you're going to have twice the line.
Impressive lines. The next scene we get, though, before we move on to the Roger Meyer Sr. film, really brief scene, TGI McScratchy's Good Time Food Drinkery. And I think the common theme on Parents Island is every person there hates their jobs and wants to die.
Yeah, I love the joke of, it's always New Year's Eve, and that they think it's fun, but they realize the repetitiveness of it is horribly depressing to the people who work there. And it's something you think about when you think of the employees at a theme park who have to repeat things all the time.
Oh, God.
I thought about it. The first time I thought about it as a kid was going on the King Kong ride and realizing, like, this every King Kong ride, the woman on this ride has to say the same lines every time. Yeah. All day long. And there's actually a really great Weird Al song about this subject called Skipper Dan, which let's hear a little bit of that here. Now my hopes have all vanished and my dreams have all died, and I'll probably work forever as a tour guide on the Jungle Cruise ride. Skipper Dan is the name. I love that.
I've heard it before. Is that a Fountains of Wayne style parody? It
I
sounds
think
like
so.
It. Like when he parodies styles but not actual songs.
It's something that's less known in the Weird Al oeuvre, unless you're an obsessive of it, that he does songs that are style parodies. Dare to Be Stupid is probably his most famous one.
Yeah.
But that he
Frank's 2000-inch TV, things like that.
The Traffic one about Jam. Charles Nelson Reilly is a White Stripes one, and the video makes it even more clear. But
oh, Everything You Know Is Wrong is a They Might Be Giants song.
Yeah.
That's my favorite, I think.
And but Skipper Dan, I love it because it is about, it's the story of a guy who is a great actor who moved to L.A. to become a movie star, and then he became a Disney cruise ride guy who just constantly points out the same thing over and over again, and it is about the depression of that repetition. But it's, I love that song. It's a Kafka-esque nightmare.
No, I would assume, like, if I had this job, like, do you maybe still have that glimmer of hope? Like, I have to put my all into every performance because maybe this time, like, Steven Spielberg's assistant is on the ride today and might recruit me.
It's true. Or, like, Robin Williams was on your ride. He's like, you could have tried harder, man. I'm really disappointed in you. Like, yeah. I would think at that point, then you'd kill yourself. Yeah. Like, well, the landmines thing, and another sign joke I didn't get the first time, that it is sponsored by Laramie, which Laramie Cigarettes sponsors the landmines, which is another reference to how Epcot, I think, is the guiltiest of
the
sponsorship thing. And just, it's... theme parks are expensive, so they gotta, sometimes you gotta have horrible sponsorships, but I don't think Disney will, even in the 90s, would have worked with a cigarette company. They probably wouldn't have done that. And okay, so then we get our introduction and the creation of a Roger Meyers Sr.
Right. Was he mentioned before in Itchy and Scratchy the movie?
Never.
Okay, yeah, I didn't think so.
I think they did. They do imply in Itchy and Scratchy the movie that Itchy and Scratchy has existed that long.
Yeah.
But they didn't say that they were a descendant. Like, Roger Meyers does not really appear in Itchy and Scratchy the movie. It's not about that episode. And so it's not about his ownership or the parentage of it. And then the next time you see him in the front, he's more of a Hanna-Barbera type who's like, no, I have always owned this.
And like, I think in Itchy and Scratchy and Marge, he was named Roger Meyers Jr. to imply like he's sort of a Roy Disney or like the child of a great legend who created these characters.
That's
almost.
True, yeah. But they never really talk about Roger Meyers Sr. So this is our first touch on him.
Great stuff. I like
love
how dark it
all
is.
So much. Yeah. It's so great.
Roger Meyers Sr., the gentle genius behind Itchy and Scratchy, loved and cared about almost all the peoples of the world. And he, in return, was beloved by the world. Except in 1938, when he was criticized for his controversial cartoon, Nazi Supermen Are Our Superiors.
Great stuff.
I love that. It's a great parody of the fawning Disney documentaries you'll see at Disneyland of, like, Walt Disney, the greatest man who ever lived.
Where they just step over his character flaws, you know?
Well, that's what also the film, the film about the making of Mary Poppins, Mr. Brooks?
I think something like that.
But in it, it was the first time they'd ever, like, had somebody play Walt Disney. Tom Hanks plays Walt Disney. And they wouldn't. Disney still was like, you can imply, the Disney Corporation was like, you can have him mention that he smokes cigarettes, but we really are uncomfortable with you showing Walt Disney smoking. He's like, well, he died of fucking lung cancer, you know?
I'm sure there's a million videos of him smoking.
Yeah, but so the Nazi Supermen Are Our Superiors. It is obviously a joke about the assumed anti-Semitism of Walt Disney, which, were Chris here, I would also agree with him. He'd point out that, like, that records of that are spotty at best. That he more so, I would definitely agree, he hated union organizers, and a lot of them were Jewish, and he didn't like those Jews union organizing. But I am also of the belief, I don't think he was any more anti-Semitic than the average rich man was in 1940.
I also want to say all of our listeners should go listen to You Must Remember This, a great podcast. They have an entire episode about the Disney strike, an entire like 13-part episode about the blacklist. And basically what you learn is it all comes down to money.
Yes.
And it's, okay, so Disney didn't want unions in his organization because money.
Yep.
What is a good way to gin up fear and distrust of people in unions? You associate them with undesirables. Like at that time it was black people, Jewish people, foreigners. You could easily paint all those people with the same brush and, and gin up hysteria for them. So
fortunately that doesn't happen now. Nobody scapegoats any other people to get away from blaming capitalism for stuff. But
I love that series though, because you got in trouble, you lost your job, you were blacklisted if you hated Hitler before it was cool to hate Hitler.
That's
like
one
pre-fascist
of my fascist
hatred.
That's one of my favorite things of like when they look back on people to call communists in the 50s, they're like, well, before Pearl Harbor, you were against Hitler. And the only reason you do that is if Joseph Stalin was paying you to hate Hitler. It's like, there's no other reason that you could hate Hitler in America before Pearl Harbor, and unless you're a Jew. And then but then if you're a Jew, you're probably a communist too, bringing communism to America. But yeah, it was unnaturally proto anti-fascist or something.
Something like that, some weird thought crime.
Then when I heard that, I was like, holy shit, like it blew my mind. Like, oh yeah, that's always been America. Like, that's always, another defense of Disney thing I will say is that he never made a pro-Nazi cartoon, and in fact made anti-Nazi cartoons, which were funded propaganda by the taxpayers. He didn't just do them because he hated it. The best one probably to watch is Der Fuhrer's Face.
It's great.
It is a great cartoon, one of the best like animated ones ever. It is also pure propaganda. Like when Donald wakes up from his dream that he is a Nazi, and that he literally wakes up in American flag pajamas, and then kisses a Statue of Liberty,
right,
a golden Statue of Liberty, and then says, I'm so happy to be an American citizen.
They kind of gloss over the major problems of Nazi Germany.
Yes.
The main gist of it is, if you were in Nazi Germany, you'd be working really hard.
Yeah, they still got in jokes to say that Goebbels is gay.
Good.
In that. And of course Hirohito, like he
looks different.
He's basically a gecko in that. Like he has green skin.
Gross.
But
is this whole thing ignoring the fact that like in the Itchy and Scratchy movie episode they made Itchy and Scratchy beat up Hitler?
Yes. Well, see, 1938 was when he made Nazi supermen are our superiors. In 1938, you could be kind of friends with Hitler in America.
Yeah, he backed the wrong horse back then.
Yeah, but there were lots of people who backed the wrong horse before
Lindbergh.
Lindbergh, or there was also oh my god, on the Chapo Trap House podcast, I learned about how like the guy who wrote the Harvard fight song was like good pals with Hitler and helped write like Nazi anthems. And then and then afterwards, like they never talk. They like just welcome back. Like, the guy who wrote the Hitler fight song, come back. Or the guy who wrote the
Hitler
fight
song.
Yes. They never talk. So lots of people were friends with him. It's a great moment in Citizen Kane where they are playing back Charles Foster Kane's life.
You're right,
and showing like, and infamy, and showing him shaking hands with Hitler.
That's still a better special effect than anything in Forrest Gump. I have to say, it held up a lot better. But
speaking of special effects, there was a Scratchtasia.
Scratchtasia is beautiful. Yeah. I rewatched Sorcerer's Apprentice after watching that. I was like, it is so perfect. The animators do it perfectly. Of the Mickey shattering, like chopping to death the broom scene is exactly the same. It's some of the most fluid animation done. The animators went hog wild with Scratchtasia.
It's a lot to ask the TV animators, make this look like a classic Disney thing and more
some of
frames.
The best animation of all time. Make it look like that.
Yeah. But I have to point out, so in Itchy and Scratchy the movie, it was a big deal that Itchy and Scratchy were having a movie. They've had several movies throughout history.
You're right.
You know?
You're right.
Come on, Pinocchio, Scratchtasia.
But I was also trying to think, watching this, like, it was rare to see Scratchy do violence to Itchy.
Oh, yeah.
I was trying to remember the last time or any other time.
At times, Scratchy will do violence if Itchy gets him back. Though, of course, in Homer Goes to College, it was a major moment that Scratchy finally gets Itchy.
And they could never show it again.
Not in a million years.
Like, I mean, like even attempted violence on Itchy, that's true. That is foiled. I can only think of when they were using the guns on each other, but that was like way back during.
But obviously it was to, you can't kill Itchy. And the I love the breaking down of the cells. It was kind of, it almost
with tiny
felt like,
axes.
It almost felt like Futurama-y science-y stuff. Like, well, if you could chop down the broom into 20 pieces and they come back as brooms that size, does that work infinitely? If you were to chop it into dust, would they then just be more brooms?
I gotta say, a major bummer in looking up The Sorcerer's Apprentice, I forgot that there was a live-action movie with Nicolas Cage in 2010, and I'm thinking, what could that even be about?
Yeah,
I know it has nothing to do with the animated short, they're just coasting on the name or whatever, but Jesus Christ, who gives a shit?
Nicolas Cage is Yen Sid, and he's teaching a Shia LaBeouf type how to be a sorcerer. Yeah. As we point out many times, Chris has smartly pointed out, until they spent $4 billion on Marvel and then another $4 billion on Star Wars, they tried to make their old rides and cartoons into things for young men.
And it worked for Pirates of the Caribbean, but this
not so much for the Haunted Mansion. Though.
Yeah, or Country Bears. Then we get the return of Cletus.
Oh, don't get me a picture of this crazy critter.
No flash photography, please.
God,
how did he afford that? How did he afford to get to the park?
Yeah.
That's true. I'm going to think he snuck in.
Yeah.
I'd say that.
I got to say, Cletus has gotten more articulate over there. Look at my pokeball cracker. And, like, you can barely understand what he's saying.
That's true. It's so
he got less. His hillbilly factor was toned down over the years. Now you can understand what he's saying.
And it is a real flaw in the robots that flash photography kills them, which, like, there would always be flash photography in the park. They'd be at like 800 times a day.
I think they figured since the robots are outside, people would turn their flashes off because it's not going to do anything if you're outside.
That's true. And man, I wince every time I see that eyeball poke out joke in Pinocchio. Like, but I like how he goes, ouchie! Like,
no, you'll be good.
That Castellaneta on the commentary points out that like he's recognizing he's defaming his Italian ancestry with that voice.
But just Itchy like laughing for that extra few seconds so the robot can burst through.
Yeah, to imply how desensitized they are. That I do like that extra laughing. It's kind of, it'd be weird to think of that in the movie. Yes.
And they got full time. They got to make it to 90 minutes at least.
Then we get the second appearance of the Little Bastards brand for the stink bomb Bart
throws. The traveling kit, yeah.
And I love the, I just love all the sounds of the guys in the shoes. Like, it's just wanted to entertain. Yeah. And that's where the SS uniform guards like show up to capture them. They're really getting much clearer on the Nazi imagery. Yeah.
And the Westworld imagery, too. If you see, so any of the scenes in this episode of people like looking at monitors, talking into microphones, that's Westworld. Anytime they're in the like the Itchy and Scratchy Land bunker with stark white walls and long hallways, that's also Westworld.
Yes.
Anytime there are robots strapped down and they're taking them apart, that's also Westworld, including when they take the face off of Scratchy or Itchy. They do that with Yul Brynner in Westworld.
Yeah, it's a great scene in Westworld. He doesn't scream, and I love why do they scream? Actually, let's hear that.
Mop and Bucket Man to the exit of the Nauseator.
We have another jumper in the roof of TGI McScratchy's.
We need more Bort license plates in the gift shop. I repeat, we are sold out of Bort license plates.
I really wish they wouldn't scream.
A little...
Yeah.
But the callback to Bort, I think that cemented it as a forever thing. Like, the Bort scene is great, but then having the callback...
That is a great callback.
I think it makes it perfect, the Bort stuff.
But I think one of my favorite nonsensical lines in an episode that has a lot of nonsensical lines, Bart saying before he attacks the... I forget if it's Itchy or Scratchy, but before he attacks the puppet... So you think you're God's gift to women, eh?
Yeah, it's Itchy. It's itchy.
And it's like, but he's just performing in front of family.
I just wanted to entertain. Yeah, it's so weird that's where he...
I feel like there's something missing, or it's just like...
If it's a reference to a movie, I don't know.
I think Bart is jealous of Itchy because Itchy's getting all the attention. He's a guy in a costume getting attention, and he assumes that's the coolest thing you could be as a guy in an itchy suit.
Oh, and I didn't mention it before, but I love their... vacation outfit designs.
Oh, me too. Yeah,
it's
they're very
new
cute.
Designs for them, and that, well, especially Lisa in her like drawstring mm-hmm. pullover and pants, like that. I think because she would be kind of cold at that amusement
yeah.
park,
yeah.
just her regular
Marge
dress.
Marge in her nice sweater.
Yeah,
very cool. It's, and, Homer in a green jacket.
And Marge trying to get those personalized shirts. I just love the line, "Your older, balder, fatter son."
Yeah.
And that, and then Marge wishes to be thrown in a hole, like, thrown in the hole. Like,
yes, the German soldiers.
They have to be German just to yeah. make it even more clear, like, these are SS you. And then they're going to kill her. And, yeah, then we get another scene that's basically a combo Westworld Jurassic Park scene.
You've got to listen to me. Elementary chaos theory tells us that all robots will eventually turn against their masters and run amok in an orgy of blood and kicking and the biting with the metal teeth and the hurting and shoving.
How much time do we have, Professor?
Well, according to my calculations, the robots won't go berserk for at least 24 hours. Oh, I forgot to carry the what.
He breaks their necks
yeah.
like they're dead. But
his arms just shoot out and grab both of them by the neck.
And I was glad in that scene that was Frank, because I think if they didn't have a Frank, they would have just had a Jeff Goldblum type
yeah.
to give that speech. And that scene is basically in Westworld to say the robots are going to go crazy, but saying chaos theory, that makes it the Jurassic Park.
He's no dreamy Ian Malcolm. Yeah.
Yes.
In Westworld, what happens is a robot snake bites James Brolin,
mm-hmm.
and then they cut back to that bunker or whatever, saying, oh, that should never happen. There should be a 0.003 margin of error. And then as the movie goes on, the error escalates until everyone is dead.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then when they get freed, Homer talks about how he's a political prisoner. And I do love that line, like, do I have to draw you a diagram? It should be so obvious. And then they get confronted by the robots, which... Homer thinking the robot's in love with him is a really dumb joke, but I love it.
Super Looney Tunes.
Hey, look, this one's coming on to me. Yoo-hoo, Mr. Robot!
He pulls out a handkerchief like that. Only in cartoons, like, and in the 1930s, did anybody wave a handkerchief
yeah.
at someone. And then Homer is like, responsive to a robot being in love with him too.
Really open-minded.
It's funny. It's funny.
And I think this is the first time they recognize Homer in universe has only two heirs and gets them chopped off, and it kind of remains that way for much of the rest of the scene that he has. In a lot of shots, you'll see his two little hairs, like when he says, "Nobody does this but me, maybe the boy," like he still has the nubs of hair, not the full comb over.
Watching this episode, like, every time, it always just feels abrupt that they go from, like, daytime, go to the jail, then it's nighttime. And there's, like, no, like, park closing scene or something.
I guess you can... I inferred of just, like, the time it took them to free Homer and Bart, it was, like, hours or at least an hour, so it lets sunset pass.
And they're the last people there, and they're being let out. But I gotta say, this third act is so short. It's like a three-minute act.
You're right, but it's
great, yeah. I just noticed how short it was after watching it again.
It's great and action-y. I love this cutaway.
I know we should have gone to the bird sanctuary.
The biggest seed bell you have. No, that's too big.
So
I've said that a million times. Like, no, that's too big.
I want to see the size of the seed bell that they told him about.
Yes, that. So that implies that if they had gone to the bird sanctuary instead of being in a Westworld parody, they'd be in a birds parody, which is that scene exactly is in the birds of Tippi Hedren is in a telephone booth,
right.
And the birds are smashing into it.
It would have made for a less exciting episode, but they probably could have outrun the robots. They only just kind of marched
pretty
towards
slow.
Them. Yeah.
Everybody else did, but well, they do outrun the robots to get to the escape helicopter, but then there's nowhere left to run.
Yeah.
Which I guess at the very least that implies why they came in a helicopter, that it's why they can't just... If this happened at Disney World, you leave Disney World. If you have to run on foot out of Disney World, you can do it. If you are on an island, then you can't, and you are trapped fighting the robots.
They'll run out of energy eventually.
And I liked when you get to hell, tell him and she sent you, that's a funny line, but that he said, like, you didn't like our capering. Like, that he used the word capering was very fun.
It's a very specific choice.
Yes. And then there's a very weird ADR line where Marge is like, looks like we're doomed, which just felt like,
yeah.
I felt like ADR just for pacing reason. And it's footage you're going to see, like, in a minute, in less than a minute. It's really recognizable recycled animation. I feel like it was just an EP decision of, we need to let people know they're worried they're going to die.
Yeah, or this is a very serious situation.
Yes, but then they discover a way out.
Dad, the Flash must have scrambled their circuits.
Who are you, the narrator?
Just keep taking pictures.
I'll get more cameras.
Smashy, smashy.
I don't approve of that.
That's a great Marge line. Yes. I also like the scene before with Homer throwing just random objects out of his jacket and pants, including his underwear, at the robots.
I love that, and that he somehow had a banana with him the entire time.
Yeah.
That Homer, I think the joke, too, is that in a movie, the first or second thing Homer would have thrown would have been the camera just to get to it, but that he has to throw six things before he throws his camera.
Two pocketfuls of change.
Which, by the way, people, before phones existed, there were these things called cameras that only took photos, and they had flashes on them.
So I'm a little confused that, so the cameras are what started them going crazy.
No. It's separate. Cameras kill the robots, but it's elementary chaos theory just says that eventually the robots will malfunction.
But doesn't Cletus's camera?
He kills a robot with it does not cause them to break. So they are interrelated, but not one doesn't cause the other. The Cletus scene just introduces the way it is the Chekhov's gun, pretty much, or Chekhov's hillbilly of introducing that. And it was a very Merkin-y, wonderful Merkin moment of Homer calling out Lisa's exposition. Like, are you the narrator? Like,
he's annoyed by the solution to their problems.
And I love Bart. It's such a great Bart moment of, you like, well, I could smash more things. Nobody can stop me.
I don't
just like
of that.
Smashy, smashy. And just some great action scenes of the Simpsons killing robots all night long. And I also, this, if it wasn't for Bort, this would be my line of the show.
It's good.
Mine.
And I'll say cheese.
The dry cool wit like that, I could be an action hero.
Die, bad robots! Die!
With a dry cool wit like that, I
who
could
who would have thought that our visit to Itchy and Scratchy Land would turn out to be our best vacation ever?
They really don't do jokes like that.
Speaking over other people.
Bart recognizing that Homer's repeating his joke.
Yeah. And it was also a worse joke that Homer shouldn't have congratulated himself on. Die, bad robots!
Yeah, it wasn't even funny. Bart's delivery at least is Arnold Schwarzenegger-esque. Yeah. But that it's such a great moment of Bart recognizing he's in a show.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. And the talking over Homer, I wish they did do that more.
It's weird that, like, they make jokes out of Arnold puns, and the worst is still yet to come with Batman and Robin.
It's true.
All the ice puns.
Ice freeze, cold, cool.
Those are really bad, but I would say your luggage before he shoots an alligator in Eraser is the worst one.
I'm a big fan of Stick Around in Predator when he throws the knife into the guy.
That is good.
I mean, all the best ones are in Commando, where he's like, I'm going to kill you last. They're like, fuck. Fuck you. No, fuck you. And speaking of wishes, I really wish this was Alex Rocco.
Me too.
It's a funny line.
It's Homer being an expert negotiator, though.
As Roger Myers Jr., the owner of the park, I'd like to thank you for stopping the killer robots. And to show my appreciation, here are two free passes.
But there are five of us.
Here are two free passes.
That's better.
Man, this is happening here. I hate to think what's happening in Euro Itchy and Scratchy Land. Hey.
Hello? Itchy and Scratchy Land, open for business. Who are you to resist it, huh? Come on, my last paycheck bounced. My children need wine. Je t'ai pas fait de call. Tu j'ai gagné ce couchon.
Okay.
Based on my research, that French is gibberish.
It's all gibberish, yeah. He just made up some French. Impressively ad-libbing fake French, I gotta say.
It was also cut out of syndication. Those last two French lines. And as a matter of fact, I think
that
the entire scene
goes on a little long.
I think the entire scene afterwards is also cut.
Oh, really?
It felt abrupt to me.
But but that obviously is a reference to Euro Disneyland, now called Disneyland Paris, which had just opened in 1992.
That's
so
right.
So just 2 years before this.
But I remember jokes outside of The Simpsons, like talking about how like desolate and unpopular it was.
It was famously unpopular. At the time, it was famously unpopular. The story on opening day, I looked into this a bit. The story on opening day was that they thought there'd be terrible traffic coming there, so they actually encouraged people to not come. I'm just like, hey, be ready for bad traffic. And then nobody came, so it was like 25,000 people were there the first day, which is a very low number for a theme park.
Yeah.
And it's still been a big loss. Apparently, it's kind of that Disney doesn't have direct control over it. It's more like they licensed it to a bunch of big companies in Europe to then build in. And it's sort of like a real estate scheme, too.
Interesting.
But it's weird. But it was created in the same way that Tokyo Disney Sea and Tokyo Disneyland were created. And those are awesome. Mm-hmm. But I think, too, it is that it feels like a cultural thing that apparently in both England and the rest of Europe, Disney isn't not known. Like, Disney isn't unknown there, but it doesn't really have the love that, like, Americans or the Japanese have for it.
Yeah, I did a little crack in the books on this because I remember all of those jokes in 90s sitcoms about Euro Disneyland and how no one liked it. You're right, Hank. 25,000 in its first season, I guess. They expected 60,000, but there was also a recession happening in France.
Oh.
But from having studied French and forgotten all of it, I know for a fact that there is a certain resistance towards American pop culture in France. There is a committee in France that is engineered to keep like American words out of the French language. So I feel like Japan loves American culture. America loves American culture, obviously, but maybe not so much Europe.
But France loves the culture that we hate.
Like, yes, Jerry Lewis.
Well, but then Japan loves France, too. It's got, but yeah, it was. I think it was that, too. It's definitely. In the early 90s, especially, you could find no more like symbolic of American imperialism in pop culture than Disney.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's more now. I'd say Transformers, actually, is a bigger representative of it. But there was a rejection of that. And, too, that reminded me, Bob, that I saw that it was partially France's much better for workers laws didn't really mesh well with Disney's not good for workers laws.
I see.
And that a lot of there was really high turnover with the people who worked in there because they're like, oh, these laws, your American rules in France fucking suck compared to where I work in other places.
Wow, I didn't know that. I do have written down that in 1995 it started turning a profit, so this joke was about to become dated, too. Though
in 2015, apparently, it was still struggling enough that like Disney had to basically forgive $1 billion in debt on it to keep it open. It was like, well, either Euro Disneyland will close, which would be a terrible thing for Disney's image, or they have to give $1 billion. They have to be like, all right, don't give us $1 billion. Like, just stay open. So, I don't know. I've never been there. I think it'd be fun to check it out, Disneyland Paris. I've actually never been to Disneyland.
It's great.
I said it before. I love the Magic Kingdom. I loved Tokyo Disney Sea because obviously Japan does everything better. But I would like to check out the now called Disneyland Paris.
Mm.
And that they have like a Ratatouille thing that just opened there, which is, I believe, exclusive to that park, which obviously Ratatouille
makes sense.
And then the ending moral seems very tacked on, but knowing the thing you mentioned at the start about how this was all inspired by how Itchy and Scratchy affects children, this is clearly Merkin speaking to the audience about why you shouldn't worry.
I just love the dull, artless violence in this clip.
Yeah. Yes.
I hope you realize now that violence on TV may be funny, but it's not so funny when that violence is happening to you.
But it would be funny to someone who is watching us.
No, Mom, he's right. Observe.
Ow.
Oh, my. Lisa, go to your room.
I guess Marge was kind of upset with herself, too, that Lisa showed her she was a bad person.
She was mad at Lisa for proving her hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And then that's why Lisa's grumble is like, I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
I guess that's the weird part is that it doesn't so much end on a joke, but it ends on the reaction to a joke.
Yeah,
you've laughed at Bart getting hit, and then
And then we're it just ends like, Lisa, go to your room. Yeah. It's actually not unlike the I Didn't Do It episode. It ends with Lisa going to her room.
Oh, you're right. But she chose to go to her room. Yeah, I feel like the message is he's trying to say violence on TV is fine. Violence against real people is not. And there's a huge difference. And these are cartoon characters, so shut up.
Yeah. So
violence against
you,
robots, great.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hey, I am less as strict of like cartoon violence doesn't matter at all. I do think as I feel we have a South Park generation of people now that like terrify me. So I do think things inspire people, like, but
bad politics are worse than any violence.
Yes, I'd say more so than that. And so I am also fine with cartoon violence. I do think there are cartoons that like it should never not be available. Like Der Fuhrer's face should always be available. You should be able to look it up. I wouldn't show it to kids under 10 who didn't know what Nazis are or the historical context. Like, I think it was worse when I was a kid that, like, they got those World War II cartoons or blatantly racist cartoons just as part of a pack of Looney Tunes crap.
I had to ask my mom what war bonds were and rations and stuff. Like, yes. What are they talking about?
Or what blackface minstrelsy was. Like,
what's this 4F thing?
What is 4F? Or, I mean, the one that I feel so uncomfortable about now is the... It is a very funny Bugs Bunny cartoon where Elmer Fudd is a Mountie and he's attacking a Mountie. And then at the end, Bugs is being sentenced to death and is like, well, what's your last wish? In front of a firing squad, like, I wish I was in Dixie, hooray. And then it is a smash cut to them performing that song in blackface.
That's right.
Which at a time when blackface is an acceptable kind of comedy, then it's just a funny cutaway. They're like, this is how we end the episode. Ah! Now it's very uncomfortable to see Bugs Bunny in blackface. And I'd like to think in the 40s there were lots of people who were uncomfortable with it. So I'm not apologizing for that. But kids in my youth had much worse cartoons just because they would license anything to just fill time on TV.
Yeah.
Now there's too much original content, so there's no need to show old Looney Tunes to kids. It only exists to be watched by old dorkuses who want to see old cartoons.
I mean, we turned out okay. That's why we're recording a two-hour podcast about a 22-minute show.
Yes, yeah.
It's probably our longest episode ever. I'm so afraid for the next one. But thank you for listening, everybody. This has been Talking Simpsons. I have been your host, Bob Mackey, and you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. You can find that at retronauts.com or look up Retronauts in your podcast machine every Monday and occasionally Friday. It's a classic gaming podcast. If you just go into the archives, I'm sure you'll find one that you want to listen to and go from there, I say.
And I am HENEREYG on Twitter. And if you want to know when new episodes go live, you can check it out right there on Twitter. And also, if you listen to this ad free, that's because you're one of our wonderful patrons. So thank you very much. And if you aren't, what's the matter you, huh? but seriously, sign up for our Patreon. $5 a month will net you every episode of The Simpsons going forward. Ad-free and a week early. Not to mention, we have already started posting Talking Critic, where we're going to go through every episode of The Critic from the beginning. And that will only be on Patreon, $5 a month. And for $10 a month, you get access to some extra cool video exclusive things there. Patreon.com/Talking Simpsons.
And if you loved all of the theme park references in this episode, we just did a Laser Time episode somewhat recently about theme park, specifically Universal Studios and Disney, and all the attractions that have now since been decommissioned and what replaced them and all the history wherewithin. And there's also Laser Time's Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime. We have the weekly show Bonus Time, which there's also a recent episode that both of you guys are on. And I'm surprised we haven't done Jurassic Park. We probably should at some point.
Yeah.
Or Westworld.
You'll hit another anniversary,
yes.
I'm sure.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Sideshow Bob Roberts. See you then.
Wow. Infotainment.